Hi everyone, and welcome to today's Google SEO Search Central Office Hours Hangout. My name is John Mueller. I'm a developer advocate at Google. And part of what we do are these Office Hour Hangouts where people can jump in and ask their questions around search and their website. A bunch of things were already submitted on YouTube, so we can go through some of that. But as always, I think it's always neat to get some live questions first. So if any of you want to get started with the first question, feel free to jump in. All right, let me see. I think some people are raising hands, so I'll just go in that order. Kit, I think. Oh, I can't hear you. I think you're still muted.
You can hear me now?
Yes, perfect.
Yes, okay. I have a three question. I have a blog, a specialized, I say my youthful business experience. After I finish writing, I often send to the editor related magazine for the both is. What should I focus on? Recommending on just one reputable and relatable magazine, or I should bought some article on many magazines. Number one or number two, okay. Do you understand what I say?
Not quite. I think you're writing content and then you're submitting it to other sites.
Yes, I submit it to other sites. I'll say to social media. Sometimes I send to magazine. What should I say? One magazine with many by many magazine with a few content. You understand what I mean?
A little bit. It's tricky. Okay.
Sorry.
So you're writing something and putting it on your website. Is that correct?
Yes, I put on my website and I say it's on some website. Link back to my website. To have more backlink to my website. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. In general, if you're publishing the content on your website and you send information about it to other people and they think it's good content and they link to you, that's fine. That's fine. I think it's something where you have to try to find the balance between sending everything to everyone and really trying to focus on finding someone who understands what you're writing about, who thinks that it's good content that you're creating, and then links to you. So I think that's generally fine. What I would, try to avoid doing is just republishing your whole content on other sites. So kind of like guest posts, something like that. For us, if you're the one who is publishing the content on someone else's site, then we would try to ignore those links and try to say, well, you're putting the content there. It's not a natural link, essentially, but rather you put it there. So that would be something that you would want to use nofollow for the links. But if you create something that's really fantastic and you send a notice about it to other people and they say, oh, this is nice, and they link to you, that's essentially fine.
Yeah. I have one more question. I have a user-generated content. Every day, I have 2,000 content uploaded to my website. However, among them, there are 500 to 900 duplicate content. is that okay? Some people buy, for example, some people post a content to buy a house, to sell a house, on district 2 and on district 1, but they just rewrite on the address, not about some policy, not change. If that's okay, I should ask them rewrite their content, to make unique content.
So just to check that I understand, you have users that are posting things on your website as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they sometimes post the same thing on lots of other websites as well?
On just my website every day.
But they post the same thing.
The same thing, but duplicate around 800 to 900%. They change some paragraph to make it different. Yes. Is that okay? Or I should ask them to rewrite the content more or change content or not upload content anymore? Yes.
I think it would make sense if you had more unique content and valuable content, so not just like taking the same thing and rewriting it and then doing it again, but rather trying to find something new that they can add. And if these are users that are posting on your website, it's from Google's point of view, it's still your website. And it's still you are publishing all of this content. And where the content comes from, that's between, like, that's your problem, essentially. So if you are just republishing what users are submitting and you're saying, this is all good content, I want Google to value my website based on it, and then If that content is bad, or if it's a lot of duplication, if it's not so useful content, it's still Google sees you saying, here is my website with all of these things. Especially when it comes to content that is made by users, I would try to find a way to recognize the good pieces of content and to highlight that within your website, and the pieces of content that you think are duplicated or too simple or not good, then maybe those are pages that you could say you add a no index to them by default, or you make them less visible within your website. Asking users to create better content, I think it's very hard, because most of the time they're doing this for free for you. And if you go and say, like, I have strong rules and you must work on my rules, then maybe they will just go away. But if it's still something where you can say, this is content that I feel is valuable, and make it visible to search, and other parts you say, well, it's OK if users are active here and if they like it here. But this is not something that I want to put in search.
What percent the two content on one page can duplicate? 10% to 20% or lower?
We don't have any fixed numbers for that. It's something where you have to think about it from your side. If users go to your website, what you would want to do there.
Yes. One more question.
Sure.
My company recently developed new business strategy. It sell people in our company will always separate website for sale and for marketing. On this website, content on this website will copy from my main company website. For example, some tips to help people solve problem or introduce our products. As I say, will I do it well for my Google spam policy? Is this spam or just have people I copy my website? I have many sales people. Excel, I give them a website and they use content of my company to sell on their website. Yes, their skill just sales skill, not content skill, so they just no copy.
I have a lot of trouble trying to follow along. Maybe if you can type the question into the chat, then I can follow up there.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
One minute. I copy it. Yeah.
Okay. I'll take a look. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks. Robin.
Right. I'm muted. this is something that hit me the other day. So there was an old function, I think back in 2015, which was basically google.com/NCR, which allowed you to access the American index without from another country, basically, so you could get the American results. And since I'm sitting in a global function, I'm working in a global capacity from Sweden, I would like to sometimes be able to see how the Americans are experiencing the Google results, and also the Brazilians and other countries. Is there any way to like force Chrome or a browser via some URL to use the local index? Because I can get I have put in some as custom search engine in my Chrome browser to use the American index, and it seems to get the American organic results, but I would also like to get like the ad results from other countries.
I don't know. The NCR is essentially no country redirect, which was in, I don't know, early days, maybe a couple of years ago, when we had the different country domains where we would redirect automatically to a local version. And that's what the NCR version does there. We don't have different indexes for search. So it's not that there's different content that is indexed depending on the location. The one thing that I usually do to see the results from another country without doing anything fancy is to use the HL equals and the GL equals parameters. So the HL is for the language, and GL is for the geographic location, I think.
Yeah.
And with those, you kind of get an approximation for the specific country versions. What you don't see is city level information, and I think what you also don't see is kind of the geographically limited ads there. So things like the local search results, where you have the map and all of that, that's not visible there. In Chrome, there is a way that you can specify the location that your browser gives. I don't know if that would be enough to do. So somewhere in the developer options, you can specify, like, Google Chrome should use this location if an app asks for the location. Someone just linked to it. Fantastic. That might be an option. The other option that I know lots of people do is just to use local proxies and just do it essentially that way, because then you know that you really have kind of local settings, local IP address, all of that. I think search isn't trying to go out of its way to make this hard for you. It's just that lots of people have really weird browser settings and IP address combinations, and we try to work hard to make it as easy as possible to get the results that are nearby. And then Sometimes that means that if you want to act like you're somewhere else, it's a lot harder.
My points.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you. But just since you are saying that you have basically the same index, so even though I am in Sweden, if I use like Google FR and Google.com and try to force Google to be the American Google, I get slightly different search results for the same phrase.
Yes. So the rankings will be different.
The rankings will be different. Okay. So the All right.
Yeah, the rankings will be different. Also with hreflang, with the country language location settings, we might swap out the URLs. So we have one URL index, but we know there are different country versions. We might swap that out. So that's also something that you would see. But from an indexing point of view, I think it's been quite a while since we had anything like country or regional specific indexes.
Yep.
What obviously also happens is we have a bunch of different data centers, and sometimes one of them is a little bit out of sync or doing some experiments and then has slightly different things in the index. But that's not explicit to different countries.
Yep. All right. Thank you. That's clear.
John, one follow-up was on the same.
Sure.
So, John, in Google.fr and Google.com version, and if I add that GL equals to that particular country in .com version, why the results are different? Because both of these things are saying the same thing, like Google.com for India. And I am using GL equals to IN. And then I'm going to google.co.in. I am also seeing that in organic, the ranking is different. Or it should be the same.
It can be different for lots of different reasons. So that's something where lots of things play into the kind of localized rankings. And sometimes that's as simple as you're in different experiments and we're trying things out with rankings. And that's why you can sometimes see different things. But even when we try to recognize like a city level information and try to improve the local search results for that, that's another really common reason why you would see that. Yeah.
OK, thank you.
Sure. Let me just go back to your question. Thanks for posting that. So the question is, my country created a business strategy. Each of our salespeople is equipped with a separate website with a sales kit. And the information is essentially copied across the different sites. Would that be in violation of Google's spam policy? So for something like that, depending on the number of websites that you have, it might be that the web spam team says this is like doorway pages. And if that's the case, then like especially if it's if it's tens or hundreds of these websites, that's something where from a website point of view, it might be kind of tricky. Also with our algorithms, it might be kind of tricky. What I would recommend doing if these websites are mostly used in a way that like the individual salespeople point at that website, or they have it on their business card, or they have it in their email, or something like that, is to make it so that you have one version of your website, which is indexed, and the other versions use the rel canonical to point at that indexed version. So the individual versions can still be accessible. People can still go there. You can still track the activity, what is happening there. But for search, we combine everything into that one central website. And that has the advantage of your central website being much stronger. And also that the individual versions are not indexed. And with that, you don't have any trouble with the web spam side, with the policy side.
OK. It's mean in a sale website, I just canonical to main website.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cool.
Syed. All right. Thanks. Syed.
Thank you.
Hey, hi, John. Nice to see you. John, my question is regarding duplicate content or copied content. So we have two sites, and I want to merge contents of the two sites into one. And we are marking one of the site as no index, but we are not using 301 redirect, as we want the existing customers which are coming to the other site to view the same content. And if I use the same content on my other site, will that be counted into copied content or duplicate content, since both the sites are indexed? And is the same content which is just available on a different location?
Yeah. I would also see that as something where you would want to use a rel canonical to pick one of the URLs to show and to make sure that things are concentrated on that one version. So with two copies, I don't think it would be a problem, but you're kind of spreading yourself thin. It's like instead of making one strong page for your piece of content, you're saying, like, I will spread it out further. And that means all of these pages have it a lot harder to rank in search as well. So making one strong page usually is better.
What if I mark no index on one of the pages?
Sure, so that works too. Yeah. I think with the rel canonical, you have the advantage that you're forwarding all of the information, the signals that that page gets. And with a no index, you're basically saying, like, I don't care about any of these signals. I will drop them.
OK, cool, John. Thanks. Sure. So I have another question.
Sure.
So this question is regarding the content which is included in the first fold. So that is available on desktop, but not on mobile. So once we have mobile indexing, what would be the effect? So why we don't have on mobile is the reason because we don't want our users to be overwhelmed with the chunk of content while they are browsing the page, since the screen size is smaller and we have less real estate to display our products. So how do I go about this?
Yeah, so if it's not available at all on the mobile version, we will not index it. From our side, it's a fairly technical thing, essentially. Mm-hmm. If it's not in the HTML on the mobile version, we don't have a chance to index it. So that's something where you have to decide, is the content important for your website? And if so, you should also show it to your mobile users. If you say, the content is not important for my website, but it's nice to have, then of course you can do things like have it just on the desktop version, but not on the mobile version. But then you kind of have to take into account this content won't be used for search.
OK. John, what if I add the same content in a collapsible table or collapsible tab so that it's also available and does not hamper my user experience as well? So will this be treated in the same way as a non-collapsible format on desktop?
That's perfectly fine. Yeah, that's something that a lot of sites do, to take a bigger UI and try to combine it into a smaller version. I think I would just be careful from usability point of view there to make sure that it's actually usable. Because just taking a big website and combining it into a small version, you can do that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's not as useful for users. And sometimes that leads you to think about, well, if this piece of content is so important and it needs a whole big section, maybe I should make a separate page for it. And then you can confirm, is that content actually useful or not?
OK. Cool, John. Thanks. Thanks for answering that.
Sure. Thanks. James.
Hi. Thank you for taking the time. So I look after a news website that specializes in kind of gaming content. And we get plenty of traffic in terms of organic search and from stuff on guides and things like that, and plenty from social feeds to do with interviews and features. The one area that we kind of have a lot of difficulty from is kind of reactive news, because we don't show up at the moment in news tab or top stories. We were accepted on Publisher Center around kind of December 2019, but we've not had any kind of success since then. And traffic, from all I can tell, is fine. The website is quite healthy because we'll appear quite highly in search results. but it's obviously the news thing is where we're a little unsure as to what we could maybe be doing extra to kind of ensure that we're maybe being making the website set up as best as it can to potentially be included in kind of the news tab. So I didn't know if you had any advice on that.
I don't have any much insight into kind of what particularly the news side is watching out for. So I don't really have a ton of help that I can give there. With regards to Discover, that's usually something that would be independent of news. So that would be something that you could appear in, even if you're not visible in news. The one thing with Discover that I'm kind of aware of, where the team is looking into algorithmically determining which content makes sense there, is the content guidelines that we have there, which are a bit kind of different from just pure web search kind of content guidelines, because we want to make sure that the content that we're highlighting there is not clickbaity, that it's really high quality content, all of these things. And sometimes I've seen sites that have like some parts that kind of fall afoul with these guidelines. Well, I mean, it's essentially an editorial decision. It's not like we're saying it's a bad website, but some parts don't align with those guidelines, and other parts do align with those guidelines. And our systems might look at that overall and say, well, we're not sure. And then they wouldn't include it in Discover. Because for us, the bar to be shown in Discover is a bit higher, just because we're proactively showing that content to users. So it's not like someone is explicitly looking for the content, therefore we'll show it, but rather, here, you should take a look at this. And then because of that, we're a little bit more critical with regards to what we show.
Just as a very brief follow-up, so the only thing that I had noticed, and it was something that I'd checked with a few other publishers as well, is that around kind of September time, there was like a two-day weird spike where if you look at like the whole 16 months for the site, it's completely zero. And then there's sort of a two-day period in the start of September where suddenly it goes like that and then drops off. And I've noticed this from a few other publishers as well. So I don't know if it is simply something that's kind of, we are doing everything that maybe we need to, but it's just waiting for, I know that's probably not as simple, but like a switch to be kind of turned on. So is it just a case of, do you think, of just kind of bearing with and kind of waiting it out?
So what I would do is maybe post in the News Publisher forum or in the Search Central forum in general, just to get some insights from other people, especially with regards to the kind of inclusion in the news mode question, just to make sure that you're not missing anything that the news side would be watching out for. With regards to Discover, I think it's really tricky because you don't really see what kind of like how close you are kind of thing. And with Discover, I see a lot of times the traffic is very binary in that either you're visible in Discover and then you get a lot of traffic, or you're not visible in Discover and you don't get any traffic. And I assume that's what that spike was that you saw there. That's like, well, oh, we showed it, and then you got a ton of traffic, and then our algorithms are like, oh, wait.
I think from when I'd looked on Search Console, it showed up as it was the search type was news. And I think I remember seeing, like, at the time, one or two stories that were just all of a sudden in top stories. And I think a lot of the team thought, yes, like, fantastic, it's happened. And then, but then, like I said, a lot of publishers, from what can seem to work out, did kind of just dip off after 2 days. And then it's gone back to like a flat line.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd really suggest getting some input from other people. I think, I don't know, Mihai might have some ideas as well, but I woke him up. He's active in the forums, so it's something where sometimes there are small things that you can do, and sometimes it's just our algorithms waiting to collect enough positive signals, and then suddenly everything is good and working well.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Sure. Ritu.
Yes, sir. Hello, sir.
Hi.
Hope you are doing well.
Yes, you too.
Yeah. Yes, sir. I have few questions related to my website. Actually, I'm working from last 1 year, and my website Alexa ranking was that time 63,000, and now it is 5,000. After 6 months I have worked for it, now it is 5,000. I got lot of achievement on it, but my domain authority, it is not enhancing. Like it was 43 that time before last 1 year, and it is only 45, and we are getting very good organic traffic for our website, but there's no effect on domain authority. Can you tell me what can be the reason behind it?
Where are you not seeing any changes?
Sorry. Yeah, I have in domain authority.
Oh, domain authority. Okay. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Okay. I don't know. So essentially, we don't use Alexa rank. That's kind of one thing. So I think if you're tracking your website there, I think that's perfectly fine. It's something that is sometimes useful to compare. We also don't use domain authority. Domain authority is also a metric created by a third party. I have no idea what they count there. So I really can't speak for that. But if you're seeing good traffic in search, then it sounds like you're doing things well. So if the domain authority metric is really important to you, then I would try to, I don't know if it's from Moz or someone else, but check in with them to see what they're doing with that. But it doesn't have any effect at all on search. It's something that they're doing on their side, and it's not meant to be something from Google's side that we would worry about.
One question related to toxic links. Actually, I'm getting so many toxic links for my website. So I have recently uploaded a DSAO in DSAO tool, but it is not reducing the number of toxic links. It is reducing very slowly, like a little bit. It has reduced only 4 links out of 126 links. It is reducing very slowly. So it is a processor of the Google or?
Okay. So I think, first of all, for most websites, you don't need to worry about toxic links. It's something that our systems, when they run across links that they think are bad, we will primarily ignore them. So it's not something that individual links that you find which are not good would be counted against your website. So that's kind of the first step. So for the most part, probably you don't even need to worry about that. With regards to the disavow file, we use that internally to ignore those links after we've discovered those links, so that they don't have any effect at all on your website. It's a kind of a, I think, a guarantee. If you're worried about these links, you can use the disavow tool. However, they still appear in Search Console. So if you go to the links report in Search Console, they will still be there. So it wouldn't be that you submit a bad link in the disavow file, and then a couple of days later it disappears in Search Console. It would still be there. So kind of that connection between the disavow file and the link report in Search Console, that's something I would not worry about. But again, just about the links in general, especially if you're seeing individual links that pop up and you say, oh, this looks like a spammer dropped a link or whatever, I would completely ignore those and instead focus on your website and just keep moving forward and kind of ignore all of those automated spammy things that are happening. Because these spammy links, they happen to every website. And Google system has seen them so many times over the years. We're very good at just ignoring.
Okay, so one more question related to Code Web Vital issues. Like nowadays, we are seeing that we are getting lots of Code Web Vital issues, and I have seen the update also in Search Engine Land related to it. It affects on our ranking for the website. if we having so many core vital issues, if we are not going to resolve them on a time?
Yeah, so the update is currently planned, I think, for May for it to take effect in search. And that's something we call it a ranking factor. It does have an effect in the search results. But for I think for many websites, the relevance of the content is still the primary topic for ranking. Okay. So it's something where I think it's useful to make a website faster and make it better for users. That always makes sense. There will be a small ranking bonus attached to that. But a lot of times, you get a lot of value out of just making your website much stronger. So improving the content overall, creating something really fantastic that people want to find in search, kind of the relevance aspect of your website, I think is still very important. So not to say Core Web Vitals doesn't matter. It is a factor that we take into account. But there are lots of factors that we use for search. So it's not something where I would say you should stop working on your website completely for the next couple of months and only make it faster. Sometimes there are simple things you can do to make it faster. Sometimes it takes a lot of work. So finding that balance is something that everyone has to figure out on their own.
So is there any points which we need to consider to resolve these type of issues? Like I did research on it and got some points for it, but it is not working. Like, these are very common points. I'm not getting it.
So I think the most common point of confusion is the difference between the data shown in Search Console and the data in the testing tools. So the main difference there is the data in Search Console is based on what users would actually see. And it's based on the data collected from the past 28 days. And the data in the tools, when you run a test of your pages, is a live test, where you're testing right now. And it's a theoretical test, because we don't know in the tools what your users have as a connection, as a devices, all of these things. We don't know. So we have to guess in the tools. And that means that sometimes the numbers you see in the live tool and in the data that users see is different. For search, we use the data that users actually see. So that's something where the data in Search Console, I would use that as a guide to recognize, oh, I have a lot of problems I can work on, or I don't have a lot of problems. And then with the live tests, you can figure out, this is how I can improve for this problem. So that's kind of the two sides there. And depending on the type of website you have, sometimes things like using different plugins or removing plugins, they can make a big difference. So our documentation has all of these technical details on, like, here's how to make your HTML faster and how to make your JavaScript faster. But a lot of times, especially if you're working on a system like WordPress or a lot of these other platforms, just disabling plugins that you don't need or swapping out plugins against simpler ones, sometimes that makes a very big difference with regards to speed. So that's something you can try it out. You can use the testing tools to see what it looks like now. Maybe switch off some plugins to see if that makes any difference, and then test again. And if you think your website is still OK with those plugins switched off and is a lot faster, then maybe that's a simple approach to fixing it.
OK. Thank you so much, though, for your
response. Sure. Let me run through some of the submitted questions as well. It looks like we can still answer live questions forever. I'll be on here a little bit after the recording as well. So it's like, if any of you want to stick around and ask more questions, then feel free to do so as well. Let me see. So I think the top question, I can't really answer much. So the question is, for the past 7 years, the domain that Google's organic visibility has grown in multiple countries. And it goes into, it's like, why? Why is this site ranking so well? And I think, first of all, we tend not to talk about other people's sites and why they're ranking. So that's always kind of tricky. And second of all, the underlying assumption that Google domains must be doing something kind of behind the scenes to get this kind of ranking, I would question that very strongly. So in particular, when teams at Google go to anyone who's working on search and they ask a search-related questions, they get pushback automatically. We have very strong policies around that. We call them the honest results policies, which we use primarily with regards to the ad side of the business as well, where if someone who's working with an advertiser comes to someone at search and says, this person is paying so much money to Google and they have a ranking question, can you help them? Then we need to make sure that we push back on that and that we say we can't help with these kind of questions with anything search related. And the same thing applies to any internal team. So regardless of which team it is, how important it is to Google, if they go to anyone who's working on the search side, they will get pushback. And sometimes we see that escalate a little bit and that they add their boss and their boss's boss and boss and, I don't know, some vice presidents or something like that. But essentially, this policy is extremely strict on Google's side. And we do not kind of circumvent that to help any particular site. And it goes so far that I almost feel that the folks who work on SEO at Google, they almost have like a disadvantage compared to other people, in that they're kind of stuck in this weird world where if they went and asked through the usual channels that we tell them to use, it would look totally awkward. It's like these people from Google are asking these other people from Google about this basic question. And therefore, they're almost like stuck in the situation, well, OK, maybe we won't ask. And that goes so far as questions about, like, how do I verify my site in Search Console? And it's not even about ranking a lot of times. So from that point of view, I would strongly question if, like, Google Domains has any kind of secret insider knowledge with regards to search. How things are ranking, obviously, I think Google is a very strong brand, has very strong websites. And any strong company might have some advantages in that regard if they work together. But it's not something where, from a search point of view, there's any inherent advantage to any given Google property. And I think sometimes you even see this very visibly. And we sometimes see case studies that are made externally where they're like, why is this Google property not showing up at all in search? And it turns out, well, they're using JavaScript in a way that breaks search completely. And anyone can figure this out. But these Google engineers, like, we thought they were really smart people. They didn't figure it out. And these things happen. So it's something where I think sometimes you'll see Google sites doing really well when they do things properly. And sometimes you'll see Google sites not appearing well at all in search just because they're like struggling with the same things everyone else is struggling with. Let's see. The next question is about Chrome user experience report data, also kind of the Core Web Vitals data as well, similar to the previous question. And it kind of goes into the aspect of, well, there are these big differences with the testing tool versus what I see in Search Console. And the testing tools are sometimes really weird. I don't have any specific insights into this particular issue here. And it looks like it's also being raised directly with the Chrome team. So I think that's fantastic. I think that's about the best approach to take there, because we use the Chrome data as a basis for the data that we show. So that's something where essentially it's I think going in the right direction. I'm not I don't know. I think it's tricky with a lot of these Core Web Vitals issues, and I see various questions externally about them where, like, how do I figure out what is actually the problem here? Or is there even a problem here? Is it just the testing tool that is broken? And I think a lot of that, we still need to get critical feedback on these kind of topics and make sure that things are aligned before we have everything ready to roll out. So it's a bit of a rush, I think, on both sides. But it's coming together fairly well, I think. How can we help speed up the mobile-first indexing for our site? Our site is adaptive and mobile-friendly, but Google is still using a desktop bot. I totally wouldn't worry about this. If your site is, if from what you can tell, when the mobile version is used, has all of the content that you need, then it will switch over. So we have the deadline, I think, set for, or we essentially had it set for March. I think there's still some technical details with the last sites that we're working out so that we can switch them over in an optimal way. But at some point, it'll just be switched over. If that's like still in March or maybe in April or maybe even ends up in May, I don't know. We're going to be switching over all of these sites. And if your site is ready, then that will just happen then. I think from what I heard from the team, we're currently in a state where we're not automatically moving sites over anymore, but rather kind of like saving all of these up for that last moment and then switching a lot of those over at once. So if you've improved your site so that it is usable for mobile-first indexing, then that'll just happen. And if it's already showing the same content on mobile as on desktop, then you wouldn't see any effects. It's not that you would have a ranking boost or any kind of improvement in indexing because of that. Even though breadcrumbs help provide a better user experience on the site, do they also give crawlers better context that will translate into improved rankings? Probably not. So with breadcrumbs, you're essentially providing links to the higher level parts of your website. And for the most part, I would assume that you already have links to the higher level parts of your website in the usual UI. So probably just purely from a crawling point of view, we would not get additional information just from the breadcrumbs. However, breadcrumbs are shown in the search results. So it's more like you're getting a special UI in the search results for these breadcrumbs and not that you're getting better rankings or that you're getting better crawling from that. So it's, I think it still makes sense. It's just I wouldn't see it as this one trick to improve your rankings. What are the best practices for obtaining site links from Google when someone is searching for your brand name? We don't have any markup for site links. You can't force them to appear. Essentially, we try to pick those up when we think we have multiple pages from your site which are relevant when a user is searching for your company's name, and we will all show them together. So essentially, the site links that we show are normal organic rankings that we would show. We just show them in a slightly different way because it makes sense to kind of group them together. To make it easier for us to understand which pages belong together, you can work on things like the internal structure of your website so that it's easier for us to understand which pages belong together, that you have clear anchor text for your internal links. But these are all things that you should be doing anyway. So it's usually not something specific that you'd need to do to make these site links appear. If I have links in the raw HTML, but they're not present in the rendered HTML, will Google still crawl them? So it's an odd CMS navigation question. I would not guarantee that they always be picked up. So if the rendered version doesn't have them, but the raw HTML version does have them, it's possible that we will like use the rendered version for this. We also sometimes use the raw HTML version, depending on kind of the current status of that page. But it's not guaranteed that we would kind of transfer elements from the raw HTML version to the rendered version if the rendered version removes them. So that's something where probably you will see fluctuations between us seeing those links and us not seeing those links. So if you think these links are important for your website, that we can crawl your website better, then definitely make sure that they're visible to users as well in the rendered version. Upcoming site move, they plan to gradually push new site over to users over a month, starting at just 10% and select regions. What would be the best way to handle this? Should we block Google entirely until a majority of the users are getting served a new version? You can do that either way. So the thing I would try to avoid is that you end up in a situation where it's like, partially indexed in both places, and we can't properly index it in either location. That's something I would try to avoid. But if you're trying to recognize users, and I don't know how you would do that, maybe by IP addresses or by cookies or whatever, and you're sending those who have certain attributes over to your new site, then at some point that will include Googlebot as well. And then at that point, we would see the site move. So that's something where probably, depending on how you have that set up, we would see that move all happening at once. And I think that's generally the optimal approach there. I think with a site move that you're doing kind of step by step like this, or kind of as an experimental site move, I would expect to see fluctuations happening there. Because it gets very complicated when suddenly users start linking to a new version of a site, and that new version of the site is not something that we've seen before, then suddenly we have both of these indexed. So that's something where I would assume, from an SEO point of view, you will see issues until all of this has settled down. And it will take longer than a normal site move where you just say, on day X, we move everything over to the new site. And sometimes you just have to follow along with that and say, well, the marketing team wants to do it gradually, or for policy reasons, or whatever reasons, we have to do it like this. But purely from an SEO point of view, I would try to do this at one point and kind of move the site over completely. If you want to do A/B testing with the UI, with texts and things like that, you can still do that either on the old version or on the new version. But I would try to avoid putting a site move into an A/B test. Mobile first, you previously noticed that M.dot sites could have issues when moved over to mobile first indexing. Is this still the case? Then is it only a problem for Google if the annotations per Google's documentation are not in place? So the annotations are important that we can recognize the mobile and the desktop versions. So that's always important for us. That's less of a topic with regards to mobile first indexing, but more that we can show the right URLs to users in the search results. You can also help us with that by setting up redirects. So if mobile users go to the desktop page, then redirect them to the mobile page. If desktop users go to the mobile page, redirect them to the desktop page. That's another way you can help us with that. Usually, the issues that we see with these kind of sites are not kind of around the annotations, but more around the content that you show. So if the M.dot version has less content, then that would be a case where if we switch over to mobile first indexing, we would have less content. So that's usually where those issues would come from. So from a practical point of view, I think the content side, you can probably test. You can try out individually. There are also some testing tools that give you a little bit information there. And based on that, that's something where I would think about, like, is there something that you need to do, or do you just kind of wait it out and let Google switch everything over? How can I tell Googlebot that it should stop using my cookie disclaimer as a description to a page and instead use the description I added to the meta tag? It's an Angular site with server-side rendering, and the server-side rendering version, I omitted the cookie pop-up, but it still gets used as a description. So my guess So I think the last part of the question is kind of one aspect that you definitely need to watch out for. If you think you're serving Googlebot the content without this cookie disclaimer, and Google is still using the cookie disclaimer in the description, then probably that serving side is not working the way that you expected. So probably there's a bug somewhere on your side that you're serving Googlebot the cookie pop-up anyway. In general, though, serving Googlebot a cookie banner, something like that, is not a bad thing, as long as the actual content is still in the HTML. So if you're showing something like a cookie pop-up or cookie banner on top of your normal HTML, then that should work perfectly fine. If you're serving this cookie banner instead of your normal HTML, so if you have an interstitial, you're redirecting somewhere else, or you're only loading the full content after a user has gone through this interstitial, then that would be a problem for search. And you can test that in Search Console using the Inspect URL tool. And there you can look at the HTML that is returned, and you can search for some pieces of text that you know you have on your site, and we should be able to find that. So I think that's kind of a critical point there. Most of the cookie consent layers that that we've seen seem to work really well with search. And I assume they're also testing this on their side, that they actually work for this. So that seems like something where maybe you're doing something unique with your cookie banner, cookie pop-up that you could be doing differently. The other thing there is you could also use kind of a separate JavaScript file that is blocked by robots.txt with the cookie banner. From our point of view, that would also be fine. And if it's a separate JavaScript file that's blocked by robots.txt, we wouldn't be able to process the cookie banner, and we would just see the site without that. So maybe that's an option. I don't know. Sometimes there are also policy requirements in play which make this a lot harder. So with cookie banners, it's kind of easier. But if you have other legal consent requirements, such as age interstitials, or maybe you need to block individual countries, then that makes it a lot harder with regards to search. And then it gets really complicated and tricky. But cookie banners should be something that should be doable so that we can index these pages properly. Cool. Wow, we still have a ton of questions left, and so many raised hands as well. But I think I need to pause the recording for now so that we have a reasonably length of a video. I'll be around a bit longer, so if any of you want to stick around longer and ask more questions, feel free to do that. But otherwise, thanks so much for all of the submitted questions. Thanks so much for all of the live questions as well so far. And hope, if you're watching this as a video, this was insightful and useful for you. And maybe you'll join us in one of the future Hangouts as well. So thanks a lot, and see you next time.